Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mark Rose Podcast. Today I'm coming at you with a solo episode where I want to explore quitting drinking. And let me preface all of what I'm about to say with that. The reason I want to talk about this is that it's one of the best decisions I've ever made in my life, like without a doubt. And I would say that since I quit drinking, I've really made no bad choices. Now, don't get me wrong, I've made bad choices in my life, but definitely pre-quitting drinking, a lot worse choices. Just like putting my body at, you know, in risky situations, potentially saying something stupid, ruining a relationship, compromising a relationship, you know, like just stupidity because your full brain is not online. And I don't say that with judgment. I say it with like, we all know how we can get when we drink too much. And the idea that hard liquor are called spirits because stuff comes out. And if we're repressing stuff, stuff comes out. If we're minimizing our feelings or suppressing our voice, stuff comes out. You know, I'll share more about this, but it's really that when you really value everything in your life and you really like your life and who you're being and what you're choosing, you won't want to drink anymore. You won't want to numb anymore because you won't want to lose control and lose the things you really value in your life. You won't want to put that at risk. And that's really where I got to, is that I just don't have a desire to drink ever again. Don't get me wrong, like an Aperol Spritz is floating around, or hey, I like a good Sauvignon Blanc, I like a good beer, I like all that stuff. And I like having a scotch with buddies. But now I just go like, yeah, that's how people connect. Why not just connect? And so if you've ever had the thought, maybe I should quit drinking. That's where it really started for me. I wrote an article for Substack that I wanted to share with you and read and also talk through and dive in on a much deeper level because I want you to know how to work through the things I work through much more quickly. I titled it, Maybe I Should Stop Drinking. What starts as a thought is not just a thought. It's a thread of memories, both past and lost, where you had a bit too much to drink, where you forgot about what you did last night, or you said something you regret, or worse, you did something you regret. I used to black out every once in a while when I drank. It was normalized, though. In college, we would joke and call it time traveling. We would say, last night I threw my hard drive off a cliff. We'd call each other or rally over brunch, trying to put the pieces back together of our evenings. And while laughter was present and there was some humor to it, it was also accompanied by a silent sadness. I won't speak for my friends, but I will speak to my own exploration of that in hindsight. Did I have such little regard for my mind and body that I would poison it to the point where it was on autopilot? And you know, as I read that to you, I think, did I have such little appreciation and regard for what I had in my life that I was willing to do that? And you know, I think sometimes when we're afraid to do things like leave a relationship, we drink knowing that we might make a choice that will make us have to leave a relationship. That's the shadow side of alcohol, right? Like we call it spirits, where suppressed things come out, repressed things come out. We know this, and that's why to me it's just so important to acknowledge that, hey, like maybe I have things in my life I don't like, and that's actually what's leading to me drinking. Maybe I'm afraid of how people will respond to me not drinking because I surround myself with people who drink, and that's what's holding me there. But back to the article. I managed to avoid this at work events for the most part. But every once in a while, I would have a little too much. I'd be the life of the party, you know, whatever it was. But I wasn't alone in this company and in this culture. And I think that culture of partying and drinking, that's what insulated me from the career risks. I did definitely have a little more control of it there. But knowing that sometimes I could even put my job at risk, a career I liked. It would take a lot of maybe I should stop drinking thoughts over the years before I actually stopped. And my problem with alcohol wasn't what would be thought of as a traditional alcoholic. I wasn't waking up in the wrong places. I wasn't doing drugs. I wasn't destroying my life on an explicit level. And I wasn't at what you would call a rock bottom. Sure, sometimes I would have casual sex. I would sometimes put my body in places it shouldn't be. But again, that was part of drinking culture. That was part of going to bars and being single. That was part of how I numbed. And I think about that as I read it to you. how we will use alcohol as a way. And I don't want to say we, I don't want to project on you, but I will own that for me. And maybe that allows you to take ownership for yourself, if this is true, that we use alcohol as a way of suppressing our values. I did that because I could then have casual sex. I could then do things that were out of integrity with like what I really truly wanted, which was like a deep, loving, committed relationship. But I also wanted arousal and desire and sex and novelty, but yet I couldn't access that fully embodied. Like there was, I didn't want to put my heart in places that I didn't want to, I guess, put my wiener, my dick in places that my heart didn't want to be. That's probably the best way to say it. My, you know, as much as like the culture around men and women when they're young, but especially I would say men, is this value in promiscuity and how many women you get. And from a soul level, didn't subscribe to that, but I also saw that that really ascribed a lot of your quote unquote mate value, the evidence of your mate value. So when I go back to the origins of my relationship to alcohol, I can trace it back to high school. I had social anxiety with girls, and below my shyness was a deep fear that I wasn't enough. I'd been slightly overweight when I was 10, 11, 12. And while the social hierarchies started to form as it does in middle school, I found myself staying at the bottom of this hierarchy. I saw that the solution to this was to get fit, to get status in sports, to get status with my body's performance and good looks. It was almost like a perfect storm of social fear met high fructose corn syrup, which soothed my pain, which made me chubbier, which fueled social exile and a lack of belonging. So let me eat more sugar, and on we go, right? This cycle of feeling rejected, not knowing how to manage that or use that emotion or talk about that emotion, and then using sugar as a way of numbing that, because that was the drug then for me and for so many people, processed foods, you know, high carbohydrate loads, and then you put on weight and then the cycle continues, right? It's a slippery slope and probably a familiar recipe for so many of us as processed foods infiltrated our lives in the 80s and 90s. Insert all the metabolic challenges that we suffer from today. Between the summer of grade 8 and grade 9, I mostly starved myself and I rode my mountain bike pretty religiously. I lost weight and had developed a pretty significant level of fitness, and I came back to school with a little bit of pop in my step. The girls noticed, I made sports teams, I rose up the social ladder, etc. But what lived below my newfound sense of social peace and power was the fear it could all be taken away from me at any moment. I had not resolved the pain of being rejected when I was the same person in a slightly different body. The truth of evolutionary social value weighed heavily on my soul. To deal with this anxiety with girls, I would often drink in high school to take the edge off. I was extremely social and outgoing and learned that comedy could bring solace to most things. I smiled as I went through my days, but what lived below my smile was a lack of connection to both my anger because of how I'd been treated when I was 10 to 12, and also sadness for the ways in which I had treated my body that summer to gain access to social capital. In relationships, I lacked access to boundaries because I wasn't connected to healthy anger. I didn't want to be like the other guys, quote unquote. And add to that the messaging around men and toxic masculinity. And most sensitive boys become men who become doormats and operate in relationships as quote unquote nice guys, aka codependency. As Robert Glover so famously said, nice guys are anything but nice. Because what lives below our need to please is the need to be liked, because being liked is correlated to being safe. If you see how good I am, you won't leave me. And so the unconscious belief goes, we all know the story, whether you're a man or a woman, it doesn't play out differently. I know this article or podcast started out about alcohol, and it will come full circle to that. But I tell you this story to point out how our relationship to alcohol doesn't just start out as a relationship to alcohol. There are social and cultural factors at play, like drinking culture in college, etc. But what lives below the dysfunctional relationship to any substance or behavior that impacts your state is the desire to feel differently than you feel. I didn't have the tools to navigate what was going on for me socially in elementary or junior high. I didn't know how to share the suffering I silently held in for the majority of my childhood until my late 20s. The interesting thing about pain is that it demands to be felt, and whatever we bury just reroutes and gets stronger. Alcohol was a mechanism that I used to not feel what was desperate to be felt, because I thought the feelings would consume me, Little did I know it was the alcohol that would.
You know that moment when you land in a new country and you open your phone and nothing? No data, no maps, no way to let anyone know that you've arrived. You're stuck wandering around the airport searching for Wi-Fi or trying to figure out how to buy a local SIM. Usually while jet-lagged and juggling luggage, it's not exactly the dream start to a trip, is it? That's where something like Saily can make a big difference. It's an app that offers eSIM data plans in over 190 countries. So instead of scrambling for a connection, you're online the minute you land. No SIM cards, no waiting in lines, no awkward language barrier at the phone shop. And because it's an eSIM, you only need to install it once. So if you're hopping between countries, you don't have to switch anything out. You just choose a regional or global plan in the app and you're good to go. There are even security features built in, like changing your virtual location or blocking malicious ads, so you can browse with a little more peace of mind too. So whether you're traveling for work, adventure, or just getting out of town for a bit, it's worth checking out.
Get an exclusive 15% discount on Saily data plans. Use code MARKGROVES at checkout. Download the Saily app or go to www.saily.com/markgroves. I didn't know how to hold grief and anger. I didn't realize that holding it would be what allowed me to hold it. Do you hear that? Do you understand that? As in, the act of being with my pain would allow me to hold my pain. In the act of being with my suffering, the suffering would move through me. If someone could hold my hand as I held it, I would be able to explore it without feeling dragged down into the underworld. It would take years of thinking maybe I should quit drinking before I did. And I tell you that because no matter where you are in the process, I want to point out that there is a brilliance to that thought. Your soul is telling you to get sober so you can get clarity and direction. And when you're ready, you'll listen. For me, the choice came from four things. My now wife quit drinking for a year in 2017. She was never really a drinker, but I was inspired by her choice. She showed me it was possible to hold a line, and those around her fully respect that line. She also said to me, courageously and lovingly, "Have you ever thought about exploring your relationship with alcohol?" I got a bit defensive, as you can imagine. And then I got real. She saw what I felt inside, the thoughts I had, and I needed to hear what she said. And that's what really loving, powerful partners do, is call us to our highest potential and risk our relationship to really present us with uncomfortable truths. The second one is that I was walking in Soho in Manhattan listening to a book from Paul Selig, and it said, "Your body can only alchemize the lowest level of truth you're willing to hold." What? Okay, there's something to that sentence, but I didn't know what it meant. I just knew that it mattered. It went on to say, "What is something you know to be true that you don't live?" Instantly, I heard a voice. "I need alcohol to connect." Oh, damn. I knew that in order to move to a higher level of consciousness, I need to live the truth I knew. In the book, he talks about, it's like being a fish swimming in an aquarium who learns about the ocean and goes back to the aquarium pretending they don't know. And that was enough for me to really recognize I was not living a truth I knew, and that needed to change immediately. The third is, I was speaking to my good friend Trevor Boehm when I met him at a bachelor party. He wasn't drinking and he was so freaking cool and he was having the best time. I asked him, "When did you quit drinking?" To which he replied, "I quit the day my ex-wife left me. And it was the best decision I've ever made." Okay, well, this evidence is really building up. And you know when you're looking for a message or you're in search of something, the universe is like, "Here it all is. Good luck. I'm going to waterboard you with reality." You know, the universe or God, whatever you want to call it, was delivering me all the things. I wondered to myself, for the fourth one, I wondered to myself, why hadn't I stopped? Oh, I have a bachelor party coming up. I have a guy's trip. I have a birthday party. I have a wedding I'm emceeing. I always had something. And then I realized that my resistance to quitting drinking was my fear of the resistance it might create in social settings and with the people I drank. Oh, my Lord. What would it bring up in them? What would they say to me? I realized that me not drinking anymore had a lot to do with how others would feel and then how their feelings would impact mine. Oh, Lord. Codependency in motion. When I had that realization, whoo, that was really the moment I quit. I was letting social agreements and the imagined response of those people around me determine my life, my choices, and my health. Are you kidding me? I knew that that was a problem. Do you see that the seed of needing to belong, the fear of standing in my power, and the desire to be chosen, all from my younger years, still lived in my choices as it related to alcohol and others? The truth is, I quit drinking not just because I felt I needed to. I quit because the way I felt in my body, the work I was doing in the world, the relationships I had in my life, they all mattered way more to me than anything else. I never wanted to not be conscious of what I was choosing again. It was this numbing which was allowing me to create a life that didn't align, that I needed to feel the pain of so I could create an aligned life with choice that mattered and reinforced my values. There's a saying that the opposite of addiction isn't sobriety, it's connection. And while that connection is to others, it really is the connection to ourselves. And bringing that fully alive, fully feeling version of us to life and love, we need it. That fully alive version of you, that's your intuition. That's your guidance system. And I think when we don't like the guidance we're getting, when we don't like the messages we're receiving, that's, again, doorway for alcohol, for drugs, for doom scrolling. You won't need or desire to numb when you love who you are and what you choose. Now, I want to add a caveat to all of this, which I wrote in the article, which is none of this is saying everyone needs to get sober. But it is saying that if you have the thought, your soul likely wants you to follow up with that as an action. Trusting that feeling and trusting yourself and your inner guidance system. It's part of the journey back home to you. So I share all of that because I know that when I was exploring a thought process, the universe would deliver me these messages about it. And so I hope that me following that intuitive pull to record this for you to hear, or to you to send to someone to hear, is actually perfectly aligned with what you've been seeking. Like, show me a message. May this be your message. Now, listen, this isn't about only alcohol. This is about getting sober from anything that changes your state, that you use as a way to regulate your nervous system. And I want to add to all of this, and that's how I'll close it up, which is that I just launched a retreat that's towards the end of September, the 16th to the 20th, in Moab, where we're going to be 5 days on the river, rafting, off-grid, no technology. All the science on regulating your nervous system are about nature, right? There's a lot of other stuff like breath work, etc., but that's like coming back to breath, coming back to yoga, coming back to all those things. So I created this retreat because, to me, it's actually about getting more aligned with the circadian rhythm of this planet, which is how we all operate. And that, when you look at health, what helps, you know, create proper metabolism, create, you know, get proper sleep, it's all about having that, exposing yourself to morning light, grounding your feet. And just how much, and you know this if you've listened to me for a while, and if you haven't, let me share. My relationship to technology has actually become a really interesting thing, and relationship to social media. I left Instagram, discovered so much stuff about my nervous system, about social media, about smartphones. And now my work is really about it's always been about this. How do you use the frictions of your life to become the most powerful, centered, authentic, real version of you? And so everywhere there's friction in our life is offering us this opportunity to step more into our power. So if this retreat sounds like something interesting to you, go to createthelove.com/unknown. At the time of recording this, there's still some spots available, but go check it out. If not, there'll be a wait list for the next one. But my retreats are going to be about this, like getting away from technology, immersing yourself in nature, hanging out with other people who are super interested in that as well. And that's how you find your people. And you find your people by choosing yourself. And so if going on this retreat is you choosing yourself, I can't wait to see you there. If not, all good. I'll see you in the future, or at least be in your ears. Much love.